welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour adventure, in a while we'll hear a story of Nazi spies on the cavalcade of America, but right now it's Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days. The author of such classics as 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Journey to the Center of the Earth, we'll hear this next story, first published in 1873, adapted on the Orson Welles program This Is My Best, with Wally Mayer, Joe Kearns, Eric Snowden, and Walter Tetley, and Orson Welles, from November 21st, 1944, on CBS.
Now, listen to Orson Welles in the role of that death-defying speed demon, Phileas Fogg. This Is My Best, starring radio's most versatile actor, writer, and producer, Orson Welles, in an entertainment chosen by him especially for this program. It is Jules Verne's epic adventure, Around the World in 80 Days.
Good evening. This is Orson Welles. The play you're about to hear we first did on the Mercury Theater of the Air about 4 years ago. But the play's older than that. Like that other great box office success of the 19th century, Uncle Tom's Cabin, it's a deep-dive melodrama. But Jules Verne's classic, like Mrs. Stowe's, remains good theater, laugh as we may at the outmoded posturings of its characters. And, incredible as it may seem, its hero, Phileas Fogg, was in his day a prophet of a brave new world.
And so Shenley's Cresta Blanca wine presents Jules Verne's story of adventure and breakneck speed, Around the World in 80 Days, with Orson Welles as Phileas Fogg.
My name is Phileas Fogg.
Oui, monsieur.
I will tell you of my personal habits and what I require of a servant.
Oui.
I'm a man of simple tastes. I have my tea and toast at 23 minutes after 8. My shaving water at 37 minutes after 9.
Oui,
I dress at 20 minutes after 10. At 12 o'clock, you will serve me my lunch. I dine at the Reform Club, but at midnight, you will serve me a glass of ale and a chicken sandwich.
Oui, monsieur.
You see that the duties of my servant are not arduous. My present servant has been with me 4 years. I have been forced to dismiss him.
Oh, a great pity, monsieur.
Brought me my shaving water this morning at 84 degrees Fahrenheit instead of 86.
Such negligence, monsieur.
An unpardonable offense.
Oui, monsieur.
You are a Frenchman and your name is John.
Jean, if it does not displeasure, monsieur. Jean Passepartout.
A very good Passepartout. You may fetch me my hat and walking stick. I am off to my club for a game of whist.
Your deal, Mr. Fogg.
Thank you, sir. I believe I heard the news peddlers shouting something about a robbery as my hansom cab made its way through the street.
Yes, indeed. £55,000, no less. Stolen from the Bank of England in broad daylight.
Your lead, Mr. Stewart. Mr. Ralph is one of the directors of the Bank of England. Have you determined how to go about apprehending the thief?
We have a very accurate description of him. There is no single country in the world in which he can take refuge.
Oh, I don't know about that. After all, the world's big enough.
It was once upon a time. Your turn to cut, sir.
How once upon a time? Has the world grown smaller by any chance, Mr. Fogg?
Oh, without doubt.
Just because it's possible now to go around the world in 3 months.
In 80 days, sir. I have here a calculation made by the Morning Chronicle. London to Suez by rail and steamer, 7 days. Suez to Bombay steamer, 13 days. Bombay to Calcutta...
Yes, but that calculation does not include bad weather, contrary winds, shipwrecks, railroads, accidents, etc.
It includes everything. My trick, if you don't mind, sir.
Oh, I'd very much like to see you do it.
Go round the world in 80 days.
Yes.
I am willing.
When?
At once. Only I warn you, Mr. Stewart, I shall do so at your expense.
Mr. Fogg, I'm taking you up, and what's more, I will wager any amount you name.
Very well. I'm willing to risk £20,000.
£20,000? But, Mr. Fogg, this period of 80 days is calculated only as a minimum.
A minimum, well employed, is always sufficient.
It means you must jump mathematically from the trains into the steamers and from the steamers upon the trains.
I shall jump mathematically. Dover Town. It's now 11:22. Huh. Gained 40 seconds already.
Oh, monsieur.
Yes?
Monsieur, I have just remembered a terrible thing.
What is it?
In my haste, monsieur, in my disturbed state of mind, I have forgot, oh mon Dieu.
Forgot what?
to turn off the gas in the kitchen. It will burn.
Very well, young man. It will burn. At your expense. Left London Wednesday, October 2nd, 8:45 p.m. Left Paris Thursday, October 3rd, 8:40. Left Turin Friday, 7:20 a.m. Arrived Brindisi Saturday, 4 p.m. Set sail for Suez. Arrived at Suez Wednesday, October 9th, 11 a.m. 2 hours, gate.
Her Majesty's Consul. Are you Her Majesty's Consul?
I am.
My name is Fix, detective of Scotland Yard, covering the port of Suez.
Well, Mr. Fix.
Consul, I have strong reason for believing that the man who robbed the Bank of England of £55,000 is in Suez at this very moment.
Indeed, Mr. Fix, I'd be very interested to see him. That was a heavy robbery.
A magnificent robbery, sir. £11,000 reward for the man who finds him.
If the man is what you suppose, I doubt if he will present himself at my office.
Consul, if he's a shrewd man, as I think, he will come to have his passport visaed. And there is where you can assist me, sir. I must detain this man here on British soil until I've received from London a warrant for his arrest. Now, here is a description together with a complete...
Come in.
You are the consul, sir.
I am.
Here is my passport. May I ask you to visa it?
You are familiar as far as
I am, sir.
You come from London,
I do,
and
sir.
You are going...
to Bombay, sir.
Well, so you know this formality of a visa is useless since you travel from one British domain to another.
I know it, sir, but I wish to prove by your visa my trip to Suez.
Oh, very well, sir. Here it is.
I thank you, sir, and good day to you.
Mr. Consul. That was the man, the robber whose description I just handed you.
My dear Mr. Fix, you know that all verbal descriptions of this sort are notoriously unreliable.
Very well, sir. Since you'll not help me, I shall take other steps. I shall follow him to Bombay. If necessary, I shall follow him around the world. Rowan, Commissioner of Police, Scotland Yard. Warrant for Phileas Fogg's arrest as bank robber... not received by me in Bombay, as Fogg and his servant arrived and departed 2 days early. Send new warrant to Calcutta. Signed, Fix, Detective. Detective Fix, the Commissioner of Police, Scotland Yard, report on activities to date. October 23rd. Left Azucar, 11:30 a.m., on elephant back. At nightfall, we entered the jungle, proceeding at a steady, rapid pace, and toward morning, entered the territory of Bundelkund. At 2 o'clock, the elephant, showing signs of uneasiness, suddenly stopped.
Why does the beast stop?
I do not know, Sahib. I will see.
Well, see.
Sahib, kindly
speak in English.
Yes, Sahib. They come towards us. We must remain still. If the elephant is hidden behind these trees, they will not see us.
What is that statue the natives are dragging?
Kali, the Hindu goddess of love and death.
Interesting.
Sacre bleu! Look there, a woman. She is beautiful.
What is the meaning of this barbaric spectacle?
Sati, Your Honor.
What is Sati?
Sati, Sahab, is a human sacrifice. The woman you have just seen... will be burned to death tomorrow in the early part of the day on the funeral pyre of her husband.
Burned alive. Oh, the villain.
Yes, sir.
A native custom. This corpse, then, was her husband?
Yes, sir. The prince, her husband. The Raja of Bundelkund.
Let me see. We have 12 hours. We can devote them to rescuing this unfortunate, savage woman.
Monsieur, I have misjudged you. You are a man of heart.
A man of heart, Passepartout? Occasionally, my dear friend, when I have the time.
With Orson Welles as star and with Jules Verne's classic story, Around the World in 80 Days, Questablanca is bringing you This Is My Best. Now, here is John McIntyre, your Questablanca host.
A famous American wit once said, when I demanded of my friend what viands he preferred... he said, a large cold bottle and a small hot bird. The hot bird may be a brace of mallards or pheasants, the man of the house so proudly bagged. It may be a plump chicken or the king of holiday birds, your Thanksgiving turkey. Fragrant with spice and savory juices, it graces your festive table with haughty magnificence. The large cold bottle will, of course, be Cresta Blanca California Sauterne. You can choose Cresta Blanca Sauterne with full confidence that it will lend distinction to your feast. Cresta Blanca Sauterne has an elusive, delicious flavor that adds extra zest to fine food. It's a light, golden dry wine with a delicate aroma all its own. Cresta Blanca Sauterne is extra good, served extra cold, as the crowning touch to your Thanksgiving dinner.
This is Orson Welles again. As we continue with Jules Verne's fabulous odyssey around the world in 80 days, we join our friends, Phileas Fogg, Passepartout, and Detective Fix of Scotland Yard, deep in the jungled Indian province of Bundelkund. Having determined to prevent Princess Aouda's untimely death on the funeral pyre of her dead husband, Phileas Fogg has obtained entrance to the temple of Pillaji by a clever ruse, and is there awaiting the hour of dawn, the hour appointed for the cremation. As the funeral ceremonies commence, Passepartout and Detective Fix wait tensely in the shadow.
The hour is at hand, Monsieur Fix.
Where is your brave master who was going to save the princess? Tell me that, my fine friend.
Rest assured, Monsieur. Always on the point.
My master arrives.
They're opening the temple doors. They're dragging the girl out now. Oh, mon Dieu, she has fainted. They are putting her on the pile.
Here comes a chap with a torch. It'll all be over in a minute now.
Oh, tell me when it is over. I cannot look.
He's putting the torch to it now.
Oh,
wait. Wait. Something's gone wrong.
What is it? Quickly, tell me.
The dead Raja, he's come to life. He's lifting the girl up in his arms. Now he's carrying her down the temple steps.
Passepartout.
The voice of my master.
Quick, help me get her into the howdah. Hurry before they suspect that I am not the dead Raja.
But, monsieur, how did
you... It is simple. I merely substituted the clothing of the dead Raja for my own and took his place on the funeral pyre.
Oh, how beautiful she is, monsieur.
Where am I?
It's awake, you speak.
Who are you?
I am Phileas Fogg, princess. Worry no more. I shall carry you to safety and, if necessary, all the way to England.
San Francisco to London, Commissioner Fleet, Scotland Yard. Phileas Fogg, French servant and Indian princess arrived. San Francisco, December 3. Leaving 6 p.m. for New York. Advise Her Majesty's Consul, New York, to take steps for extradition. Signed, Fix, Detective. Salt Lake City to London, December 5. Traveling same train as Fogg and party. Fogg and Princess Aouda constantly together.
Your turn to cut, Princess.
Save our trump, Mr. Fogg.
Your lead, Miss Fix.
Seven of clubs.
Good. Train is stopped, Passepartout. Come with me. We will ascertain the cause of this unseemly delay.
Oui, monsieur.
Excuse me, madame. Engineer, what is this? Why do we stop?
This is Medicine Bow, sir. Words just come through that the bridge is shaky and will not bear the weight of the train.
We will not, I suppose, remain here and take root in the snow.
It will be 6 hours at least before help gets here.
Cannot the river be crossed in a boat?
Can't be done, sir. The creek is swollen with rains. You can never make it.
Understand, please, I have a ticket here, which is a contract in effect with the Central Pacific Railroad to convey me from San Francisco to Chicago. I demand that the Central Pacific Railroad fulfill its contract. In addition to that, here is £100. The present rate of exchange, $483.22. If I am in Omaha tonight.
There might be a way of passing.
On the bridge?
I reckon as how.
With our train?
I calculate.
Oh, but the bridge threatens to fall, Monsieur Fogg.
It is my idea that by rushing the train over at full speed, we have a chance of passing.
Ingenious.
Oh, dear.
How considerable is that chance?
40%. Maybe 50.
Then why do we wait? Come, Passepartout, let us return to our whist game. And it's a very interesting hand.
What has happened, Mr. Fogg?
Oh, nothing. Say, don't concern yourself about it, dear.
The train is backing up, Monsieur.
Naturally. Shall we proceed with our game, madame?
I have forgotten what for trump.
A spade, my dear princess. My lead, I believe.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Fogg, but you just led the Ace of Clubs. Do you not remember?
I beg your pardon. Proceed, madame.
I believe odds are good, are they not?
Oh, mon Dieu, can you speak of nothing but wheat? Look at the window. The bridge is just ahead.
Is something amiss, Mr. Fogg?
Oh, no. Continue the game, madame.
The three of diamonds, Mr. Fogg.
I believe this trump is good, is it not, Mr. Fix?
Right. Oh, mon Dieu. We go faster and faster. Oh, we are at the bridge.
Good heavens, what was that?
Sacre Dieu. That was the bridge falling behind us.
I think we shall win this hand, Mr. Fix. Captain of this ship.
I am.
I'm Phileas Fogg of London.
I'm Andrew Speedy of Cardiff.
You are ready to sail, Captain Speedy?
In an hour. But no passengers.
Oh?
Never have passengers. A cargo that talks too much.
Your vessel sails swiftly.
Between 11 and 12 knots.
Do you wish to convey me to Liverpool, myself and three persons?
No, I'm setting out for Bordeaux.
I will charter the ship from you.
No.
No, I will purchase it from you.
No.
No, I hold here in my hand a not inconsiderable sum of money, Captain. Do you see it?
I see it.
You see it, and will you then take me to Bordeaux?
I will not, even if you paid me $200.
I offer you $2,000.
For each person?
For each person.
And there are four of you?
Four.
I'll leave at 9 o'clock.
Engineer, you'll keep up your fires and continue on your course until the complete exhaustion of the fuel. Do not let the fires go down. On the contrary, let the fire continue full.
Aye, sir. May I ask her if Captain Speedy is still locked in his cabin?
I perceive that he is no longer locked in his cabin. Good evening, Captain.
Mutineer, locking me in my cabin, bribing my crew. You'll hang for this in England, sir.
Captain Speedy will forgive me for many slight inconveniences I've caused you, but you're an obstinate man and my business is urgent.
Where are we?
770 miles from London.
Egypt. What have you done to my ship?
I have sent for you, Captain, to ask you to sell it me.
No. By all the devils, no.
Then I shall be obliged to burn her.
To burn the ship?
Her upper portions, for we are out of fuel.
Burn my ship? A ship that's worth $50,000.
I offer you $60,000.
Almighty heaven.
Well, Captain, what do you say?
And the iron hull will be left?
The iron hull and the engine, sir. Is it a bargain?
A bargain.
Passepartout?
Monsieur.
The carpet bag, Captain Speedy. Here is your money. The ship is now mine. Dismantle the furniture and fire up the debris. Burn the poop deck, the cabins, the bunks, the spare deck. Burn all rafts, masts, and spars. Railings and remaining portions of the deck into the fire with them. We must have more speed. Our time is running short. There is still a mathematical chance. Well, Passepartout, we have all but won the race. It is now 20 minutes before noon, the 21st of December, and we are standing on the quay at Liverpool. We are only 9 hours from London. We make all haste. Victory is at hand.
Oh, I'm so happy for you, monsieur.
And I too, dear friend. I feared I had delayed you and caused you to lose your wager.
On the contrary, Princess. Passepartout, call a hansom cab.
One moment, there.
Detective Fix?
You are really Phileas Fogg?
I am, sir.
Then with this warrant in the name of the Queen, I arrest you for the theft of £55,000 from the Bank of England. Oh, Mr. Fogg, forgive me, sir.
Sir?
Pardon, sir, pardon. I've made a terrible mistake, sir. The real robber was arrested in Edinburgh this morning, sir. You may go, sir. You're free. Hurry.
Mr. Fix, I know of only one way to express my gratitude to you.
No.
Take that, sir. Come, Passepartout. friend. I've been around the world in 80 days and 5 minutes. I've lost. Princess, I have desired to speak with you this evening in order to beg your forgiveness.
Nonsense.
Can you ever forgive me, madame, for having brought you here to England?
I, Mr. Fogg.
Be kind enough to allow me to finish. When I thought of taking you so far away from that country which had become so dangerous for you, I was a rich man. But now, madame, as you know, I am ruined. I dare no
longer. But you, Mr. Fogg, what will become of you?
I, madame, I shall need nothing.
Your friends?
I have no friends, madame.
Your relatives?
Relatives? I have no relatives now.
I pity you, Mr. Fogg. They say that with two, misery itself is bearable.
They say so, madame?
Mr. Fogg, you will not think me bold if I ask you whether you might wish at once a relative and a friend. Would you have me for your wife? You close your eyes, Mr. Fogg. Will you not look at me and answer my question?
I love you, Aouda. Yes, in truth, by everything most sacred in the world. I love you. And I'm yours.
Ah, my friend.
Did you ring, monsieur?
Passepartout.
Oui, monsieur.
You will notify the Reverend Samuel Wilson of Marylebone Parish of our intention to be married tomorrow, Monday.
Oh, monsieur.
Well?
Monsieur.
What is the matter, Passepartout?
Monsieur, the marriage is impossible.
Impossible?
It is impossible tomorrow, monsieur.
Why tomorrow?
Tomorrow is Sunday.
Oh, no. Monday. Today
is Saturday, monsieur.
No. Have you lost your mind? Today is Sunday.
No, monsieur. Today is Saturday.
Today? Saturday? Impossible. Wait. Of course. I have made my first miscalculation. In traveling around the world from west to east, we have gained 24 hours. Summon a cab, Passepartout. There's little hope now of saving the day, but I still have 10 minutes. That minimum shall be employed in a last, desperate effort to reach the Reform Club in 10 minutes.
Gentlemen, he's lost 100 times. I calculate 20 days at least is the time he'll be behind. That is, if he's still alive.
Oh, the whole thing was senseless from the start. A delay of only 2 or 3 days would be enough to destroy his chances.
Yes, indeed, gentlemen. Tomorrow morning we can present to Baring Brothers Mr. Fogg's check for £20,000.
3 minutes. Your deal, Ralph.
Yes.
Driver!
Yes, sir.
Is not this quite all?
Yes, sir.
Well, turn about, go back. Go back, you fool. You brought me a mile in the wrong direction.
Sorry, sir.
Sorry, sir. Sorry, he says. I tell you, my man, if you cause me one fraction of a second.
Gentlemen, we may safely congratulate ourselves. The bet is won.
1 minute, 5 seconds.
50 seconds left.
40.
25. 15.
40. 12. 10. 9. 8. 7. 6. 5. 4. 3. 2.
Good evening, gentlemen. I am here.
Now here is our star of the evening, Mr. Orson Welles.
Thanks a lot. Thank you. You know, when I told friends of mine that I was going to play around the world in 80 days for This Is My Bet, some of them expressed a little surprise. They asked me if I really considered Phileas Fogg my best performance. It may not be my best performance, but it certainly was the most fun to do. And I sincerely feel that Phileas Fogg is one of the most extraordinary characters in all fiction. Well, for next week on This Is My Best, one of America's finest contemporary writers has chosen the work he considers his best. It's McKinley Cantor's tale of the tangled Missouri Hill Country, The Romance of Rosie Ridge. Robert Cummings and Louise Albritton will star in it. I'll be listening, too.
Presta Blanca's new program is prepared in collaboration with Whit Burnett, editor of the book, This Is My Best. And all radio adaptations for this series are by Robert Tallman. The musical score is composed and conducted by Bernard Katz.
This Is My Best, with Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days, first heard on CBS on November 21st, 1944. It's an hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and that was a story of spies and industrial diamonds on the Cavalcade of America and the NBC Red Network production of Diamonds at War, first heard on July 26, 1943. Ted Jewett, Harlene Francis, Carl Swenson, and Charles Coburn all star.
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Charles Coburn in Diamonds at War. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company. Tonight we bring you a new radio play, Diamonds at War, written by Peter Lyon, especially for Cavalcade, and starring Charles Coburn as Mr. Eustace Leffingwell, the most self-assured diamond merchant you'll ever meet. Maybe you didn't know how vital rough, uncut industrial diamonds are to the war effort. You may rest assured that our enemies are fully aware of their importance. So was Mr. Leffingwell in Robert Terrell's best-selling mystery from which our play has been adapted. There's the transatlantic clipper, settling gently down on LaGuardia Airport in New York City. And here, out of the big plane, come three passengers who last set foot on the ground in Lisbon, Portugal. Each of them is thinking about Mr. Eustace Leffingwell, but for different reasons. And the steward asks each of them a question.
Sir Roger Payne Wexford?
Right here.
Would you want space on the limousine in town, sir?
Yes, I believe so. Thanks.
He's an important British official of the Ministry of Economic Warfare.
Miss Patricia Moon?
Yes, I shall want space in the limousine.
She's a young English girl, very pretty. We'd like to get a look at her.
Mr. Alexander Barker?
Barker is a young American who's been administering Quaker relief in Spain. Keep your eye on him.
Mr. Alexander Barker?
Oh, yes, thanks, yes. Space in the limousine for me, too. Patricia, can I help you get your things through the customs?
I'll manage, thanks.
Well, let me take your briefcase.
Oh, not a chance, Alex. Where this briefcase goes, there go I, until I see Mr. Leffingwell. Come on, we don't want to miss the limousine. Well, Alex?
Well?
I thought you were going to point out objects of passing interest as we came into Manhattan. Where's Grant's tomb?
It's on the other side of the island from where we are.
Oh.
What's the matter with you, anyway?
Hmm?
You've been as nervous as a cat ever since we got into this limousine.
Just keep your fingers crossed for me, Alex. Maybe nothing will happen at all.
Well, how are you getting mysterious again?
You're angry with me.
Oh, not angry, Patricia. After all, I've already proposed to you. I may say you've got me plenty jealous of this Mr. Leffingwell, whoever he is.
Jealous of Mr. Leffingwell?
I certainly am.
Oh, if you could see him.
Well, I will, all right. When I do, he and I... Look out! Look out!
What's the matter?
That car is going to run right into it. Look out, you fool! Patricia, all right, dear?
Oh, I...
Come on, dear. Let's walk around. Come on, it'll do you good.
What happened? I was stuck.
The car there. It hit us. Smacked us right into that elevator train pillar. You all right now?
It's better, thanks. Why, Alex, my briefcase. Where is it?
Briefcase? You must have dropped it.
Oh. Patricia, you hurt?
No, I'm...
Funny.
What?
Driver of that car. I saw him a moment ago. Now he's gone.
You saw him?
Yeah, funny-looking guy.
Alex, Sir Roger, my briefcase.
Oh, Lord, yes, I'll get it, dear.
I'll get a cab. You hold on here, Patricia. We'll go into town by taxi. You're sure you're all right?
Yes, sure.
I can't find your briefcase anywhere, Patricia.
Well, never mind it now.
Wasn't there something valuable, huh?
Oh, yes, there was, rather. I knew something like this would happen, Alex. I didn't want you to come to town with us. Oh, well. Come on, there's Sir Roger with a taxi.
Well, people, where can I drop you?
I'm going straight to Mr. Leffingwell's office. You, Alex, you'd better head straight for your home in Philadelphia.
Oh, no. No, I'm going to this Leffingwell's office with you, and I shan't take no for an answer.
Patricia, 47th Street.
Thanks.
And don't forget to keep me in touch with any developments.
No, I won't, Sir Roger. And thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Patricia.
All right, Alex. Come along if you're coming. Now, I must say I'd rather you didn't mix yourself up in this affair.
Where are we going now?
Right here. See? Doesn't look like much, does it?
Eustace Leffingwell, Belgian-American Diamond Company. So it was diamonds you had in your briefcase. You were trying to smuggle diamonds into America.
Not exactly, no. Mr. Leffingwell?
Welcome to America, Miss Moon.
Thank you.
Well, I noticed three things about you. You have an ugly bruise on your forehead. You've not got your briefcase. And you've brought your young man to my shop with you.
Oh, don't be vulgar, Mr. Leffingwell. He's not my young man.
Alexander Barker, 32 years old, a Quaker, back from Spain, where he's been administering relief to Spanish orphans.
Hey, what goes on here?
Home, Philadelphia. Connections, one widowed mother.
But how? Where did you...
I made it my business to find out about everybody that was on the plane with Miss Moon, Mr. Barker.
Look, look, Patricia, explain this. What about your briefcase?
Your young man looks trustworthy, Patricia. Let's tell him about your briefcase.
It was a blind, Alex. We happen to know there's a ring of Nazi diamond smugglers operating in New York City. The briefcase was a plan to see if we could draw the Nazis' fire. And it did, but... we don't happen to be any the wiser for it.
Oh, this is fantastic. You're both trying to pull my leg.
No.
What do the Nazis want with diamonds? They're vain, but they're not that vain. Not at all.
Not diamonds for jewels, diamonds for machines. Industrial diamonds for machine tools.
But Germany has plenty of machine tools.
Yes, but they're wearing out, Mr. Barker. In wartime, they wear out rapidly.
Well, I don't believe the Nazis can really smuggle diamonds out of the country. They'd never waste the effort. It wouldn't be worth it to them.
Oh, that's what you think.
Mr. Barker, let me tell you a story, a true story. Here in New York, within the last month, three men were arrested. One of them sneaked a handful of industrial diamonds out of his office and sold them to a Nazi agent, who in turn got them to another Nazi in Portugal. This little handful of diamonds, Mr. Barker, this pitiful little handful, wasn't worth much. The first sale brought the first man only $4,000. But what do you think the Nazi in Portugal paid for them, hmm? Well, go ahead, give a guess.
10,000?
10,000. Mr. Barker, he paid 200,000 for them. That's how much the Nazi needs diamonds, Mr. Barker. Oh. What do you think an airplane is made of, Mr. Barker?
An airplane? Why, of aluminum chiefly. Aluminum and plastics.
Aluminum and plastics, yes. But airplanes are also made of wire. There's 100 miles of copper wire in every bomber. You draw molten copper through a hole in a diamond. After producing thousands of miles of copper wire, the hole in the diamond still will have the same dimension.
Yes, but if you know there are people in the diamond business who are shipping diamonds to Hitler, why don't you tell the FBI and have them arrested?
The people involved don't travel on German passports and Heil Hitler, Mr. Barker. They are quite likely to be Americans. Just as American as you or I.
And you don't know who they are?
We'd hoped we'd get a clue when they made a try for my briefcase this morning.
Hey, wait a minute. What about Sir Roger?
Oh.
He was pretty interested in your briefcase, Patricia.
Oh, no, Alex. He's working on it officially for the British Ministry of Economic Warfare.
And so, for the moment, we don't know where to go. They have left us without a clue.
Maybe not. I just remembered something.
What?
The wreck this morning. You remember, Patricia, I said I'd seen the driver of the car that hit us?
Yes.
Well, what about it? Could you recognize him again?
I'm certain I could. He was unique. He was an albino.
An albino, eh?
And something else. This.
What's this?
I almost forgot it in the excitement.
Oh, a wallet?
Yes, it was lying in the street near the car that hit us. I picked it up.
Let me see it. Calling cards. Draft registration. Automobile license. What's this?
Membership card in a German singing society.
Singing society, eh?
And here, look at this card.
Solomon Schmidt,
But it can't be.
I don't understand. Who is Solomon Schmidt?
It must be just a coincidence.
Coincidence? It's an awfully long coincidence.
But Solomon Schmidt's credit rating, his years in the diamond market, why, he buys from some of our biggest automobile people.
The people involved don't travel on German passports and Heil Hitler.
Oh, all right, all right. Well, you wait here. I'm going over to Sir Roger's office right away.
Well, why didn't he want us to go along with him?
Oh, I don't know. Why should he? He can handle Sir Roger without us.
Maybe.
Alex, what are you suggesting?
Look, Patricia, how much do you know about this Leffingwell?
Why, I've never seen him before, if that's what you mean.
Ah, yes.
But I've been in his London office for 5 years. Why?
He knew an awful lot about me and about your briefcase and about how much profit you can make out of smuggled diamonds.
Alex, you mustn't think such things. Mr. Leffingwell is a very patriotic man.
Patriotic? I wonder.
It's not much evidence, I grant you, Sir Roger. And I know what you'll say about Solomon Schmidt.
Oh, it's preposterous, preposterous. Schmidt is no fly-by-night trader. He's a responsible merchant with solid industrial connections.
Nevertheless, he...
Nevertheless, fiddlesticks. Let me tell you just how fantastic your accusation is, Mr. Leffingwell. I have only this morning had an appointment with your Solomon Schmidt and arranged to dispatch him to South America as purchasing agent for more industrial diamonds on that continent.
I see.
He's leaving this very night.
What?
Mr. Leffingwell, Miss Moon may have told you that originally I opposed your participation in this business.
Just what are you driving at, Sir Roger?
Well, the fact that your plan fizzled has compromised your usefulness in any case. I never did really like your extra-legal status. This is not a suggestion, Mr. Leffingwell, much as I regret it. It's an order. You're to cease all your operations against these smugglers.
So that would seem to be that.
You don't mean you're going to accept his orders and quit now?
I am not. In the first place, I don't entirely trust Sir Roger's judgment or his conclusions. And in the second place...
Answer the phone.
Well, all right, all right. You needn't shout at me.
Sorry?
Sir Roger shouts at me. You shout at me. The telephone shouts at me. Hello. Hello, yes, this is Leffingwell speaking. Yes, this is Mr. Leffingwell. Yes, Miss Moon is here. Mr. Barker, too. Well, who is this? What's that? Mr. Barker.
Yes.
Go quickly to the window and look around. See if you see anybody you know.
Right.
Hello. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hear you. Will you speak up a little? Yes? Yes? Yes?
Nothing wrong. The albino across the street.
I thought so. Yes, I understand you very thoroughly. Yes, yes, yes. Well, you needn't shout at me.
Well?
What was it?
An ugly voice has just warned us that if we attempt to stir from this office before 6 o'clock tonight, we'll be killed before we can get off the block.
Well, it's all clear now.
If you only knew. Only yesterday, I sold Solomon Schmidt $65,000 worth of first-class watts.
Oh.
And tonight, before 6 o'clock, he'll leave for South America.
The albino's still across the street looking over here. There's another man with him now.
Well, if there was only one of them to get away from. I have it.
What?
Miss Moon, I want you to do two things. First, give Mr. Barker and me exactly 15 seconds to get out onto the street. Then turn in an alarm from my burglar alarm system.
Yes.
Second, leave this office when the alarm is turned off and go to the pier from which the boat is sailing tonight for South America. We'll just have to hope there's only one such boat.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Come along, Mr. Barker. You understand, Miss Moon?
Absolutely.
Then come along, Mr. Barker.
I still don't see what this is going to get us.
You will see, Mr. Barker. You will see.
I'll see what?
There. Oh, that's very pretty. See our thug number two? He's hammering on the door. He's trapped in the arcade. Come, walk fast towards 6th Avenue. We must keep ahead of thug number one, Mr. Barker. Your friend, the albino. And we must hurry if we are to get off this street at all.
Well, what happened? Why can't he get out of the building?
It's very interesting.
You see, a diamond is stolen, so the burglar alarm is turned in.
Yes?
Immediately, every door in every building in this block is sealed. Every elevator stopped. It's wonderful what they think of to make things difficult for criminals. Now, hurry. Our friend, the albino, is following us.
It's a pity you couldn't have arranged to trap him, too.
Yes. We're going to have trouble with the albino.
You're listening to The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, presenting Charles Coburn in Diamonds at War. Charles Coburn, as Mr. Leffingwell, is a member of an international diamond syndicate, but neither Patricia Moon, young British agent, nor her American friend Alex Barker seems quite sure whether he's cooperating with the government or the Nazi gang which is trying to smuggle industrial diamonds to Germany. As our play continues, Barker and Leffingwell are trying to elude two Nazi agents.
My eyes aren't so good as they used to be, Mr. Barker. What would you say was causing that crowd at the end of the block?
Well, the street's roped off. There's a line of cops across the street.
This is fine. With the fifth column on our heels, we have to be cut off by the New York Police Department. Well, come on, there's only one thing to do.
Well, now what?
Go down a manhole.
Manhole?
Yeah, they don't suppose you carry a gun with you.
Well, I've never felt the need for one before.
Well, that's too bad. And all I have is this little .38. Well, here we are. Help me prise this lid off, will you?
All right.
Hurry. Albert Albino is getting curious. Yeah, that's it. Now then, down you go. After you, Mr. Parker.
All right.
Right down that ladder into the sewer, please. Okay, Mr. Barker?
Oh, yes, yes. What made you think of using the sewers?
Oh, I had a romantic childhood.
Yeah. How come you know so much about these sewers?
Well, once I figured out theoretically how to steal diamonds. Just a theoretical problem, that I assure you.
Oh, just theoretical. I suppose everything you know about this smuggling business is just theoretical.
Yes, in a way. Are you worried down here alone in the dark with me, Mr. Barker, with no gun?
Frankly, I don't know.
Well, here we go into the water. Now, mind you don't catch cold.
What's that?
You must go faster, Mr. Barker.
Oh, Lord, what's happened?
He's shooting. Come. He's coming closer.
There he is.
Yes, I can see him. He can't see us. I'm going to jump him. Stand ready. I knew we'd have trouble with that albino. Well, come on.
Well, he's dead.
Sure he's dead. When you tripped him, he had his fingers around my throat. I didn't have more than 2 minutes to live when you tripped him. Then he would have killed you.
Dandy.
Well, come on.
Are we going to leave him here?
You're darn right we are. That's what a sewer is for. You know, Mr. Barker, there are many ways to die in a sewer. You may not credit this, Mr. Barker, but it is possible in a sewer like this to die from asphyxiation.
Oh, fine. I'm glad to hear it.
Yes, indeed. If one of these side pipes happens to get blocked up, gas forms. You stay in a sewer very long, and you'll come out with your head in a fulmer. I'm warning you. You hear me?
Oh, yes, yeah, I hear you.
Live steam might escape and scald us to death. Cooking gas could escape. Well, you could be electrocuted at any moment from a live wire, you know. You might even be drowned if the water in the main should burst a block away. Watch out, Mr. Barker. It's deeper here.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Or you might even have broken your neck on that iron ladder.
Yes, but all those deaths would be accidental. I'm not worried about accidents.
Still worried about my little 38, eh, Mr. Barker? But there are so many other ways to die down here. The atmosphere, for instance, makes it easy to catch pneumonia. And the gasoline, a spark you strike when your heel hits iron, might ignite the vapor and blow us up. Do you feel any better, Mr. Barker?
Oh, yes, fine, thanks.
Well, here we are. The platform, up you go, up this ladder. By my dead reckoning, we should be able to climb right up to Park Avenue.
Mr. Leffingwell, you know, I'd feel happier if you went up first, if you don't mind.
Really, Mr. Barker? You're a very suspicious mind.
Well, after all, I watched you shoot one man already.
But if you're frightened, I'll kill you. Just think of all the other ways you might die down here.
still more ways?
Oh, yes. There are rats down here, Mr. Barker. And these rats and sewers sometimes grow to be a foot long.
Oh, that's nice. I'd still prefer you to go up the ladder first, if you don't mind.
As you will. Anything to get out of here. I think... I think I'm catching a slight... a slight head cold.
All those ways to die, and you have to catch a head cold.
Well, don't be bitter, Mr. Barker. You should be glad it wasn't you. Well, come on. We'll have to hurry if we're to meet Patricia in time.
There's Patricia waiting for us now.
Oh, at last. I thought you'd never get here. Alex, are you all right?
Oh, sure. Patricia, good to see you again.
There's no time for what's in your eye, Mr. Barker. Patricia, walk right up to the pierhead as though you have business inside. Don't let those two Coast Guardsmen bother you.
But isn't the pierhead door locked?
And I don't have jimmies and skeleton keys. I used to be a Boy Scout, you know, in my youth. Well, let's go. Hurry, Mr. Barker. Down these steps to the captain's cabin.
You mean just walk right in?
Well, this is a free country. Watch me. Oh, Captain.
What is it?
Put up your hand, Solomon Smith.
What? Son of Vetter, it's Leffingwell. I suppose you're after the diamonds, isn't it?
It is. I'd make it about 1,000,000 carats.
But, Mr. Leffingwell, you forget that you will have more difficulty in walking off the Eliza Gustafson than you had in walking on her. My crew is hand-picked. By the way, Miss Moon, isn't it? And this other that Mr. Barker I've heard so much about.
That's right, Mr. Schmidt. Keep your hands up.
Schmidt, get this clear. I'm not bargaining. I'm demanding. Either I shoot you now as you sit quietly against the wall, or you come ashore with me.
I believe you would kill me.
Believe me, Schmidt, he would.
But there must be an alternative. I will give you the ship. I have the papers, so I will make them out to you. That and the diamonds, $3,000,000 at least. And for me, the chance at a plane. Better bargain?
Someone's coming down the stairs.
Oh, Sir Roger. Are we glad to see you.
Mr. Leffingwell, you amaze me. I thought I told you to stay out of this affair. Don't you realize that there's a crew of 50 men aboard this ship and that none of them is exactly a Democrat? And Mr. Barker and Miss Moon.
El Capitan.
Carlos, come right here.
Someone else to join the party.
Oh, yes. You can speak freely in front of Carl. He speaks only German. Very devoted to our Mr. Schmidt, I'm told. Carl would tear your heart out at a word from Mr. Schmidt.
I don't like his looks, Sir Rogers. Let's get him out of here.
Look out, Schmidt's got a gun.
Why didn't you search him and take his gun?
Why did you have to shoot him, Sir Roger?
What I've done, as a matter of fact, is to narrow control of the Diamond Syndicate. I have to be honest with you, narrowed it drastically.
What is this, anyway? What's going on, Sir Roger?
So naive, Mr. Barker. At least Mr. Leffingwell and Patricia are more sophisticated.
You're a traitor.
Don't ruffle my feelings, Mr. Barker, with such coarse language.
Of course he's a traitor. Sir Roger, despite his English birth, his title was just that. A Nazi agent.
Yeah, yeah. Very pretty speech, my dear. But all that is beside the point now. We cast off in precisely 7 minutes. I shall be needed on the bridge. Due to the unfortunate accident which has overcome the captain, I, as first mate, must now take over.
You tell me, Carl.
What's the matter with our friend Carl?
As you so rightly observe, Sir Roger, Carl was devoted to late Mr. Schmidt. His mind moves slowly, but apparently he's now seeking revenge. That's a rather large knife he has in his hand, too.
Stop. You stop where you are, or I'll shoot.
Pity, as you say yourself, that he doesn't understand English. Try your German.
I work for the Germans, Carl. Deutschland, ich. Do you understand? Ich bin Deutsch. Somebody grab him. Take that knife away from him.
He's still coming, Sir Roger. Maybe your accent isn't so good.
One more step and I'll fire.
You fool.
Stop that knife.
Right.
I'm a Nazi. Heil Hitler. Heil Hitler.
Oh, how awful.
Deutsch.
Lord. Carl stabs Sir Roger right in the heart.
Remarkable. Really remarkable. Sir Roger shot him twice, full in the chest. And he kept right on coming. He's dying now, though.
I should have learned to speak German.
Quite a mortality rate aboard this ship.
Oh, what's that?
That will be the police. Didn't you realize that a plainclothes man trailed us all the way downtown from where we came out of the sewer?
Oh, I think I may faint.
Well, one thing to be grateful for anyway.
What's that?
That you didn't really steal a diamond this afternoon in West 47th Street when Patricia turned in the alarm.
Oh, but I did.
What?
One of my own.
Oh.
That's why the plainclothes man trailed us. Here. This one's not an industrial either. I thought it would make a very pretty engagement ring for you to give to Patricia.
Thank you, Charles Coburn, for your delightful characterization of Mr. Leffingwell in tonight's cavalcade, which was based on Robert Terrell's story, They Deal in Death. And here is Charles Coburn, star of this evening's performance, Mr. Coburn.
Not every woman can serve her country as dangerously and as excitingly as Patricia Moon in tonight's play. But there is one place in which thousands of women are urgently needed. That is in the United States Marine Corps, to relieve men for active combat duty. If you are 20 years old and under 36, and have 2 years of high school or business school, write Marine Corps Headquarters, Washington, D.C., or apply at the nearest Marine Corps recruiting office. Interesting jobs, patriotic service, travel, good pay and promotions await the women who enlist in the Marines. Now, thank you.
Diamonds at War on the Cavalcade of America from July 26, 1943, broadcast on the NBC Red Network. Bringing to a close this hour of adventure on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from Radio's Yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levionier. It's been a pleasure.